From Spark and Anvil and Flight Forge, this is Drag, in Chapter 1 of the Flight Forge cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5. In the bright little workshop at the edge of Flight Forge, a small otter tween named Drag lifted a wand no thicker than a reed and pointed it at a paper plane that had just crashed for the sixth time. "Don't apologize to it," he said, over his shoulder, to the girl who had folded the plane. "It didn't do anything wrong. It's telling us something." He pressed the button on his smoke wand. A thin ribbon of white mist floated out, curling in the still air. He swept it slowly toward the plane's crumpled wing, and the mist did something strange. It slid smoothly along the top of the wing, then suddenly tore loose into angry little curls, tumbling and spinning behind it. The girl leaned in. "It's all messy back there." "Right there," Drag tapped the air where the smoke broke apart. His russet brown paw was small. His voice was soft, but it had weight in it. "That's where the air stopped agreeing with your wing. See how it slides nice and easy at the front, then falls to pieces? The air is complaining. It's saying, 'This angle is too steep. I can't hold on.'" "So it's bad," the girl said. "No." He smiled and puffed another ribbon of mist. "It's information. The air isn't fighting you to be mean. It's answering you. You asked it a question with your shape, and this is the honest answer." He watched the smoke curl and settle. "Most people cover their ears when the air talks. Then they wonder why nothing flies."
Drag had grown up in a river bend valley in a family of fish watchers. That was the whole job. Sit on the bank, hour after hour, and watch. When he was small, he thought it was the most boring work in the world. His cousins skimmed stones. His aunt did nothing but stare at the water going by. He remembered one gray afternoon when he had thrown a wide, flat pebble at the river as hard as he could, wanting to win against it, to force his way through, and the current had just slapped it sideways and swallowed it. The river hadn't even noticed him. He'd felt small then. Not just little otter small, pushed back small, like the whole river had shrugged him off. His grandfather had sat down beside him without a word, and pointed his chin at a trout holding steady in the fast water, barely moving its tail. "That fish isn't stronger than the river," the old otter said. "It's smoother. Watch its shape." The trout was tapered, pointed at the front, thinning to nothing at the tail. The current split cleanly around it and closed up again behind, quiet. "It's not fighting the water. It's listening to it. It found a shape the water agrees with." Drag had watched that trout for a long time. The heavy, shrugged-off feeling didn't go away all at once, but it changed. The pushback wasn't an insult anymore. It was the river telling him something true. You can't beat the water, but you can ask it a better question. Season after season on that bank, he learned to read the answer.
He was 12 when he walked to Flight Forge, smoke wand tucked in his belt, still smelling faintly of river. The mentor there was named Sky. She met him at the workshop door and asked him one question, the way she asked everyone. "What is Drag?" Drag thought about the flat pebble and the trout and all those gray afternoons on the bank. "It's the air pushing back," he said, "the thing that fights you when you move." Then he shook his head, because that wasn't the real answer. "But it isn't bad. It's information. Your shape asks the air a question, and the air tells you exactly what your shape got wrong. You just have to stop trying to beat it and actually listen." He pulled out his wand and puffed a small cloud between them so she could see the way the mist moved around her own outstretched hand, smooth over the top, ragged past the fingers. Sky watched the smoke settle, and something in her face eased. "Most builders come here wanting me to teach them how to make Drag disappear," she said. "You already know it never does. It only ever gets quieter or louder." She stepped aside from the door. "You belong here." His workshop filled up after that with builders who thought drag was the enemy. A boy came in one afternoon dragging a plane with a wide, blunt, brick-shaped nose. He'd sanded it and polished it, and it still dropped like a stone. "I made it so smooth," he said, and his shoulders were up around his ears. "I did everything right, and it still won't go. I'm just bad at this." Drag knew that slump. He'd felt it on the riverbank with a pebble in his hand. "Put it in the tunnel," he said, instead of arguing. The boy set the plane inside the clear plastic box. The fan hummed to life. Drag slept his wand across the opening, and the mist poured in and slammed into the flat brick nose, piling up and boiling backward in a furious white knot. "Whoa," the boy said. "That's not you being bad," Drag said quietly. "That's the air hitting a wall. It's got nowhere to slide, so it crashes." He handed the boy a lump of soft clay. "Don't make it smoother. It's already smooth. Make it a teardrop, fat and round in front, then long and thin behind, like a raindrop falling, like a fish. Give the air somewhere to go." The boy pinched and pulled the clay onto the nose. Back into the tunnel it went. This time the smoke split at the rounded front and streamed past in two clean, calm lines that closed up gently behind. "It's quiet now," the boy whispered. "You didn't get rid of the drag," Drag said. "You can't. There's always some. You just stopped arguing with the air and gave it a shape it could agree with." He grinned. "Sometimes you even want the loud kind. A parachute is nothing but drag, the biggest argument you can pick, so you fall slow and safe. It's all the same conversation. You just decide how you want it to go."
Later, when the tunnel was switched off and the workshop had gone soft and dim, the boy lingered at the door with his teardrop plane cradled in both hands. "I really thought it meant I'd failed," he said, "when it kept dropping." Drag set his wand down on the bench and thought about the gray afternoons and the trout and how long it had taken the pushed-off feeling to turn into something he could sit with. "I know," he said. "The pushback feels like the world telling you no, but it isn't. It's just telling you how." He watched the boy's shoulders come down from around his ears, slow, the way his own had come down on that riverbank years ago. "You're going to get pushback your whole life, on planes, on ideas, on everything. It's not the air deciding you're not good enough. It's the air being honest with you, so you can change your shape and try again." The boy nodded, holding his little plane a bit more gently now. And Drag felt it settle in his own chest, warm and steady. That quiet, unhurried certainty a fish watcher earns on the bank. That the push you feel isn't rejection, it's a conversation. And once you stop bracing against it, it starts to feel almost like being listened to.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to drag. Released under Creative Commons BYNCSA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.